From the four corners of Southern California, this is the Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. On the phone, I have a California State Assemblyman for the 46th District, Adrene Nazarian. How are you, Assemblyman Nazarian? Thank you very much for calling into the Hot Seat today.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And the 46th District essentially runs from the Hollywood Hills to North Hills in between the 405 and the 170, but it also goes into Lake Balboa and parts of Panorama City and North Hollywood. You are on the Arts, Entertainment, Sports, Tourism, and Internet Media Committee, the Budget Committee, the Health Committee, and the Transportation Committee. I have lots of important questions and not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. So the legislature's special session, I guess the first one, was originally intended for the purpose of funding transportation infrastructure, and it ended 2 weeks ago. I do not know of any transportation deal to come out of the legislative session. So was there such a deal?
Unfortunately not. There was many conversations around the issues of how to go about to be able to generate the revenue, given that gas tax has been declining over, the revenue for gas tax has been declining over time, partially because of our successes of more hybrid or electric-based vehicles being purchased and placed on the roads, which is great for the environment. But the less consumption of gas directly impacts the gas tax, which because of that, we have less of a revenue coming in. So less revenue coming in for that means less repairs for the roads.
And
so we're still working. We're still working that through. That session is not done yet, and we're going to be working on something in the coming months.
So, is the session? I was under the impression the special legislative session for transportation ended.
No, the special session, both for health and for transportation, did not end. They will adjourn upon the call of the speaker. And that'll be once we hopefully have come up with a compromise of a revenue-based program to be able to finance our road repairs.
So to be clear, both special sessions are still there. I was under the impression that the one for transportation ended and the one for health had started.
No, they both started at the same time. We left it inconclusive at the time of our regular session break.
Okay, so technically there's still a possibility for a deal.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, towards the end, we saw that some of the things that we were working on were not coming together, and so we decided to not try to rush it in while we were in the middle of the rush of the end of session, regular end of session work. And so we decided to, in the waning days of the last week, when some things were not coming together, we decided to hold it off. And possibly even you might hear us having to go back into session for a couple of days during the break in the coming months. Chances are highly unlikely, but if there is a item to be debated about, and it's something that amongst leadership and the executive branch, there's quite a bit of support, then the membership will be called to come in and discuss the issues and debate the issues further to move it forward or not.
Okay, and I apologize for being incorrect on the fact that it ended. Based on everything I had read from the Democratic caucus and from the Republican caucus, I was under the impression that it had for sure ended. But staying on the topic of not having a deal yet, how have you and your colleagues let it go this far without having such a deal?
Well, this started... First of all, we've needed, if you look at the context of what it is that we're trying to address, we should have been working on this years and years ago. There are currently highways and freeways in the state of California that have been shut down and out of use since the late 1970s, early 80s. So there are highways and freeways in disrepair that we have needed to make an investment in for a very long time. But because of the the economic trends over the course of the last decade and a few of the severe economic hits that we had, as well as the housing bubble, all led to a time where we couldn't finance any more improvement projects, let alone we were having a difficult time paying our own bills, especially during the years of 08 and 09, when we would have almost $20, $22 billion budget holds in our state's general fund budget. So,
yes, I understand
given,
that.
Given the economic turnaround and the revenues coming back in and the receipts going up in the state, we thought this was an appropriate time to take on this task of trying to make the appropriate investments in the maintenance.
Okay, and I want to just briefly go back to what you mentioned about the gas tax. And the main Republican criticism, or one of the Republican criticisms to increasing the gas tax, is that there's no guarantee that money would be spent properly from the gas tax. So my question to you is, what would be done to make sure that revenue from the gas tax is only spent on what is it, on what it is intended for?
Well, you know, that sounds like a great soundbite, but the reality is, what is our priority anyway as Californians to spend the money on that we generate from our taxpayers? I, for one, think that we need to spend more money on transit. We can repair roads, but roads will always fail. If we invest in transit, we will be more successful in getting more people out of their cars, utilizing the freeways much less, and putting people into a rail system, which will be much more cleaner, much more environmentally friendlier, take the stress out of the daily routine of people as they're traveling to and from work or anywhere else, cut down the time, and then allow freeways to actually be used for one of the original purposes of what they were intended to be used for, which was interstate commerce. Part of the reason why we built such an intricate system of freeways in California was because we were using it for interstate commerce. And given the fact that two of our Southern California ports, Long Beach and Los Angeles, side by side, generate almost 60% of the imports that come into our entire nation, and it's cheaper for materials to be coming in through those two ports and then trucked all the way to the East Coast in certain cases, it makes all the more sense to make sure that our freeways don't become congested, don't become a place where, especially with our continued population growth.
So is this gas tax, is this increasing gas tax that you and your colleagues are trying to pass, would it be for infrastructure repairs and mass transit projects?
Let me finish my last thought. So it's all the more important for us to be making the investments that will be much more sustainable into the future than being very short-term because, as I mentioned, every time we make an investment in road repair, it's just a matter of time where we're going to need to make the same maintenance repairs again. So some of my colleagues and I, both in the Senate and the Assembly, have also asked the governor to look at making investments not just in road repairs, but also ongoing transit investment all throughout California. I'm sorry, your question again?
So my question is, is this gas tax increase that you and your colleagues are trying to pass, would you want it to be used for, or is the plan for it to be used for, and the wording properly situated for it to be used for, infrastructure improvements and transit projects?
Ideally, yes. Ideally, it would be for road repair, road and highway maintenance and infrastructure repair, which also will include bridges and other highways, as well as transit, which would include both rail as well as buses in some cases.
And is the wording currently like that, or does wording need to be changed to reflect that?
Well, there was really no wording set. There's been different proposals. There's been a Democratic and Republican proposal, but there's never been anything that's really been negotiated. That's why we never came up with a deal.
And
so there's nothing conclusive.
What will you do and what will your colleagues do to make sure then money is only spent on those purposes and that the money is not borrowed for another budget item?
Well, there really, the intention is not to make an investment in anything else. Since over time, so much money has been cut from appropriate investments in transportation, now is the time to make that investment. So this wouldn't be a time where we would be forced to make other investments and would have to be making cuts to the important transportation infrastructure investment. This is the time, given that the economy is doing well, we need to be making those appropriate investments now and even be making investments on a very ongoing basis.
Okay. And I want to switch gears now, no pun intended, to Assembly Bill 533. And you are a member of the Assembly Health Committee, and this is a bill that would have changed the payment and rate structure for out-of-network healthcare providers in in-network facilities. Is that an accurate description of what the bill would have done?
No. And it was a great bill that Assemblymember Rob Bonta worked on, and I was a supporter of the bill. In fact, I was working with him to make sure that to make sure that it passed on the Assembly floor. But it stalled, unfortunately. I do hope that the Assemblymember will bring it back again. What's happened over time is that, given the various different health programs we have and coverage programs we have, sometimes individuals who go in for a certain operation or a procedure may not know what services may be out of their plan or not. And so they are then surprised with billings that come to them after the procedure has been done. And as you can imagine, First and foremost, any healthcare-related procedure or issue that someone has or is going through already is not a pleasant experience, let alone to then have to deal with the stress of knowing how to cover, pay for it. And then on top of that, once you feel that you've already made the appropriate payment, to be further surprised by out-of-network costs that you then need to make payments for and adjustments for, it could be extremely taxing and strenuous. And so we were attempting to come up with a way where we could incorporate these bills into one payment system and also make sure that the rates remain at an affordable level where the service recipients could afford pain.
So my question to you is, why is this a partisan issue?
Well, why is anything a partisan issue? We thought that as Democrats, I think most of us felt that this was a good issue for us to be able to work on behalf of for our consumers. We even had the support from the health plans and insurance plans for this, because I think they liked the idea of being able to offer something comprehensive to those that they are supporting and offering coverage to. But the Republicans felt that the rate adjustments would not be helpful to certain specialty professionals in the healthcare industry and so opposed the idea.
Okay, and a technical question about this bill, because this bill failed an Assembly floor vote on September 12th, which was a vote on the concurrence in the Senate amendments. Now, this failed even though the vote was 38 ayes to 10 noes. Now, why did this fail given the vote count? Did it have to do with because there weren't 41 ayes? And if that's the case, should the rule be changed so that way the majority is based on the number of people who voted rather than the number of in the total body?
In certain procedural votes, we can cast votes based on the number of members present. It's a very good question. But on issue and policy-related issues, we always need to cast 41 majority of the House, whether or not membership, complete membership is present or not.
So this failed with 38 ayes, meaning that so even though it was 38 to 10, it still failed. Do you think then that the Democratic caucus should have, and the whip and the leader should have done a better job to make sure people were present for this vote?
Well, it's not a matter of presence. I don't think, maybe with the exception of one member who had just become a father for the first time, his wife had gone into labor during our last 2 days of session. With the exception of that one member, I think everybody else was present. Sometimes in difficult vote circumstances, some of our colleagues decide not to participate in the vote because they may not want to vote against an issue, but they may not feel that the issue is ready enough or palatable enough to vote for it. So I think it was a circumstance where folks were staying off of the bill because they were not ready to vote for it yet. And any time you also have an issue where there are very big players like a healthcare industry, two sides within the healthcare industry, you have the medical doctor professionals on one side and then you have the health plans on the other side, you can expect there to be a big fight.
Do you think it's right of your colleagues, of the colleagues who didn't vote, not to have voted?
I don't want to judge my colleagues based on their voting participation. All of my colleagues serve constituencies that are very unique and different from one another. I usually like to vote on bills. The only time I abstain from voting on a bill is if I don't like a bill, and out of courtesy to my colleague, who's the author of the bill, I will abstain from voting on it, which counts as a no vote anyway. But I rarely use that tool. But in certain cases, in certain districts where some of my colleagues may be in targeted positions, they may want to be much more careful about their votes. And so they exercise that option.
Okay, and because we're running out of time, I've got one more sort of broad topic to talk about, and that is drones. And California is trying to stay ahead of the curve by putting drone laws on the governor's desk, if not into place. Are you at all concerned that California, in some cases, is being a little over-aggressive on some of the drone policies?
Well, it's a hard balance to get. You know, the more... anytime you have a technological advances that bring about new innovations into our mainstream of thinking and operating, and we have enhanced tools to deal with, it opens up opportunities for various issues that are very important to us. And drones have created quite a bit of an issue when it comes to certain, not just privacy issues, but public safety issues. In recent fires in California, there have been drones that have been operating at such levels that have been interfering with public safety efforts to quell those fires and contain them. And so it was important for us to at least send a message right away that we're aware of this issue, and if individuals don't self-regulate themselves, then we will need to take steps to regulate through law on their ability to maneuver, especially at such crisis times.
And I think most rational people would understand and more or less support the drone bill the drone bills relating to fires and first responders. But in terms of specifically Senate Bill 271, which prohibits people from flying intentionally flying over schools at less than 350 feet during school hours. Are you worried at all about any potential litigation? And what happens if someone accidentally flies over a school because they're flying somewhere on the opposite side of the school and happen to be below 350 feet?
Well, again, that's a public safety concern in other ways. You know, there's always the concern that you don't necessarily, many times, underage young adults or children, their photos are not publicly made available, or certain consent is requested from the parents or the guardians to be able to make the photos available. So in order to protect those rights, it was important for there to not be drones being too closely operating to schools. And second, again, it goes towards public safety issues because you don't know who the operator of the drone is. And unfortunately, there might be individuals who have served their time in jail because of a certain sexual-related assault or issue, and they might, you know, if unfortunately they decide to fall back on some of their habits and previous habits, and might decide to utilize a drone. This is a very specific example, but you know, in thinking through some of the ways that drones could be used, you want to try to be able to take steps ahead of there being potentially wrong things coming about.
But how would you measure altitude in a case like that? I mean, does the assembly have a way for know of an accurate way to properly do that?
That was one of the harder questions. Unfortunately, I was not on the committee that had the debate on the issue, but that's something that I think for all of us was a question, because does the altitude even matter if the capability of the photography and the megapixels used in the photography are at a quality of a level that can be very precise regardless of the altitude?
And do you think altitude matters?
I think to some extent, well, of course, I mean, to some extent altitude matters, but to some extent to what the peripheral boundary is matters as well. It's not just altitude. It's the proximity of the ability to have direct exposure to the faces of the individuals that we're trying to protect.
Okay.
So it's a difficult issue.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Assemblyman Nazarian, and thank you very much for joining me in the hot seat today. Unfortunately, we do have to end because of time, but it was certainly a pleasure having you in the hot seat, and we hope to have you back before May. The hot seat after hours starts right now. You can email the hot seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat newsletter by clicking on the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the hot seat description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join me next time with 10th District Assemblyman Mark Levine.